Good evening and welcome along to another episode of The Score. It is Mark Gallagher with you on this Thursday evening, the 23rd of July. We have a busy show lined up for you as always. Derry City are in Croatia for their Conference League qualifier against HNK Rijeka. We'll go on live very shortly with Kevin McLaughlin to Croatia. More on that in just a second, but I will tell you what else is coming up on tonight's programme between now and 8 o'clock. Former Finn Harps captain Gavin Cullen will be running his eye over all things League of Ireland ahead of Finn Harps' trip to Kerry tomorrow evening. Later on, we'll be hearing from our athletics correspondent, Patsy McGonigal, who is going to be previewing this weekend's National Senior Track and Field Championships. We'll speak with Donegal man Darren McGee on his new book about how gambling has hijacked sport. And we will touch base with Derry boxer Conor Coyle as he gears up for a huge Zuffa boxing fight night at the Three Arena next month. But firstly, let's go live to Croatia, where Derry City are up against HNK Rijeka in Conference League qualifying. There for Henry Sport this evening is Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin, around about 40 minutes from kickoff, is the atmosphere building in Rijeka?
It certainly is here. As I say, we're just in the press area here. The fans that have travelled from Derry are maybe small in number compared to Sofia, but they're between 50 to 100 fans have made the trip, and some that went to Sofia a couple of weeks ago. So, to be fair, money was tight, so fair play in making the move in out to Rijeka here. I'm just looking at the Derry City sort of team lineup. The one that stands out is Brooklyn Lyons Foster, who was just announced and met his teammates on Wednesday. And he is going straight into the starting lineup. It looks like he's slotting it right back. So it's an interesting shout by Tiernan Lynch to throw him straight in there.
Good stuff, Kevin. And how many Derry fans do you reckon have made the trip over to Croatia this evening? It'll be a couple of hundred, would there?
Yeah, well, as I say, probably between 50 to 100 have made the trip. A few of them were speaking to them last night that made the trip to Sofia. So they go to both trips in the space of a couple of weeks. Is fair play to them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be going back to Kevin McLaughlin between 7:45 and 8 o'clock this evening for an early update in the game. Thanks very much, Kevin. We'll talk again soon, all right? So after last week's 1-0 defeat at home to Bray Wanderers in the FAI Cup, Finn Harps are back in SSE Electricity League action tomorrow night in the First Division. Kevin McHugh's side travel south to face Kerry at Mount Hawk Park and currently sit bottom of the league standings with Derry in action in Europe tonight, as we heard. There's no game for Tiernan Lynch's team this week. So I'm joined now by former Finn Harps captain Gavin Cullen on the line. Gavin, thanks very much for popping on once again. How are things?
Aye, not too bad. Yourself?
All's good. So maybe we'll start this evening with Derry City. They are in Conference League qualifying action a bit later in Croatia. They didn't quite get over the line against CSKA Sofia in Europa League qualifying, but is it fair to say they gave a fairly decent account of themselves over the two legs?
They did. Like, Sofia would be, I suppose, the top club in Europe. You know, the expectations would be to be a lot higher ranked than Derry as well. So going into the second leg, they were behind, but by all accounts, they give a really good account of themselves and can count themselves unlucky not to get a result at home.
And it was marred a wee bit about the crowd trouble at the Brandywell last week. Derry received a fine of €20,000. Sofia, for their involvement, got €50,000 for their involvement in it. It wasn't a great look from either club. What did you make of the whole situation?
Yeah, I just seen a few videos and stuff of it. Like, it's disappointing when that happens. I suppose the crowd control in the Brandywell, by all accounts, the away spectators are very close to the home spectators for the game. So there's a chances of it spilling over, and it obviously did. And then seeing kids and stuff going on the pitch doesn't look good, you know. We don't really see it much here in Ireland, in fairness, in games. So thankfully, again, they're obviously fined by UEFA for it and fined heavily. So hopefully we don't see that again.
Derry, tonight they're away to Rijeka. No doubt it'll be another hostile atmosphere in Croatia this time. What would you say would be a good result to bring back to the Brandywell next week?
Well, in Europe, but Irish teams in general in Europe, no, haven't fared that great over the years away from home. A lot of the reasons for that was timing and stuff. But the League of Ireland clubs now in recent years have had some brilliant results in Europe. Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne and stuff the last few years. So Derry will be looking to emulate that. But I think Derry's ambition will be to try and get to the group stages of the Conference League. I think realistically they should be aiming for that. Obviously tonight's tie over the two legs will be difficult, but I think they've every confidence, at that level that they can do something.
From a manager's point of view, heading into Europe, would you rather have the first leg of these ties away from home, or would you rather maybe do it at home first and get a win under your belt, or does it really matter? What do you think?
No, I think you'd rather go away from home first. Like, you consolidate away from home if you give yourself an opportunity at home. If you're still in the tie, anything can happen. So I think definitely away from home is a bit as what most managers would want. Obviously, conditions and stuff away from home will dictate, and refereeing and stuff like that. But usually with a home leg and you're still in the tie, you've a bit of an advantage with the crowd and stuff, and could go to extra time and stuff like that. So definitely the way it sits would be favourable for Derry.
Yeah, the FAI Cup round of 16 draw was made this week. Derry drawn away to UCD. Suppose UCD have maybe been a wee bit like Derry this season, blowing hot and cold in different spells. That should be a really good game when it rolls around in mid-August.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting game, obviously, for the North West with William involved with UCD as well. It's a big tie for them. Obviously, they're looking at playoffs and stuff like that's more important, but it's a free hit for them playing Derry. Obviously, Derry would have rather a home game. But again, you'd be expecting them to go to UCD and get the victory and push on the cup run because of their league form this year, they're not going to challenge for that. So an FAI Cup would be an added bonus at this stage for Derry.
Yeah, I suppose the standout tie in the last 16 of the FAI Cup, the Dublin Derby meeting of St Pat's and Shamrock Rovers. Rovers, I think it's fair to say, on course to win another league title. But in a cup tie, you just never know, especially in these big derby games where both teams are very familiar with each other. It's hard to know which way that'll go.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's a massive tie for St Pat's. I think we all assume that Shamrock Rovers are going to pull away and push on and win another league title. They look really, really good. They look really strong. So they're probably well ahead of the rest in terms of squad depth and continuity of squad. So you'd expect them to push on the league. So St Pat's will be going all out in the cup tie to try and possibly cause a bit of an upset.
Let's move on to Finn Harps. They were knocked out of the cup at the hands of Bray last week. That's a disappointing one because last year the cup run to the quarterfinals really kept the season alive, and they were ultimately beaten by Cork, but it did extend the good momentum heading into the second half of the season. So that'll be a disappointing one for Kevin McHugh and co.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Bray are a good side, and by all accounts, Harps were a lot better performance-wise last week. But again, they're still struggling to put the ball in the net and take chances when they get them. It's disappointing to go out of the cup, for sure. I think Finn Harps needed that sort of wee cup run to get a wee bit of positivity around the place. I think there's 12 or 13 league games left, and it's very difficult to motivate everybody within the camp when there's not a lot to play for, bar trying to catch a couple of teams above you.
Yeah,
are not finished bottom, so it's a disappointing. But again, the Bray game was a difficult one for them.
And it is back to league action tomorrow night, away to Kerry. You touched on it there. The main objective for now, anyway, for Finn Harps will be to lift themselves off the bottom of the league table.
Yeah, hugely. It'd be extremely disappointing for Finn Harps to finish bottom of the league this year. Don't think it's ever happened. So look, they'll be working hard, obviously. The management and the squad will be playing for no contracts, looking at next season maybe already. Players are going to keep, players are going to move on, players that want to move on. So that's their motivation from now on in, obviously trying to get up the league a bit and salvage a bit of pride out of the season probably is important. So away to Kerry is difficult. We've seen that. The Kerry have always been difficult away from home, but they're only 3 points ahead of Harps. So a one for Harps brings them level, and it looks a lot more positive after that if they do get the three.
It does. It's been well documented that there are no easy games. Kerry will certainly be on the crest of a wave after dumping Shells out of the cup last week. So no doubt there'll be a massive spring in their step for the game tomorrow night as well. So it's a tough, tough game away from home.
Oh, it's a tough game. It is well documented the first division. I don't think there's an easy fixture in it. Obviously, Cork are a bit ahead of the rest, but everybody else is well capable of beating each other. We seen UCD beat Harps well in Fun Park a few weeks ago and then went and lost 6-0 to Bray. So anybody can beat anybody, and Harps know that and see that, and unfortunately, they've been at the wrong end of some results, which were tight games and maybe a bit of the rub of the green or even more quality in the final third. They may have been a lot higher up the league and looking at the playoffs, but that's where they're at the minute.
Yeah, well, we'll have updates with John Drummy from kickoff at 7:45 tomorrow night here on Highland. The four bottom sides actually meet tomorrow night. It's Harps against Kerry and Treaty play Athlone. Elsewhere, leaders Cork City are away to UCD and Cove Ramblers host Bray. There is one top flight game tomorrow. St Pat's are at home to Dundalk, while on Saturday, Galway United host Waterford and bottom side Sligo Rovers welcome Drogheda to the showgrounds. Before we move on for a chat about your own Cockhill, Gavin, the proposed Finn Harps takeover, Freddie Gonzalez, it felt like it came in like a wrecking ball a couple of weeks ago, but things seem to have cooled a wee bit. The original meetings were postponed and there seems to be maybe a bit more to getting the deal done than previously anticipated.
Yeah, it looks like it. I'm not sure if it was announced a bit earlier, maybe to get a bit of positivity around the club, or else they didn't realise the intricacies of a takeover with the way Harps are set up. But it looks like Harps are set up as a cooperative, and shareholders obviously have a say in whether it can be sold or not. And I think it was set up 30 odd years ago, so it couldn't be sold to a buyer. So obviously times have changed, the League of Ireland landscape has changed, so Finn Harps really need this snow and they need it soon. So I'm not too sure of how long this will drag out, or if there's too many stumbling blocks, or will it fall on his face. Hopefully not, but they definitely need something to happen, and they need something to happen in the not too distant future.
Finally, Gavin, I would imagine just over a month away now, I suppose, from the National League for Cockhill, I'd imagine the preparation has really stepped up for this new National League campaign, gets underway at the end of August. Have you managed to get back training and add any fresh faces to the squad ahead of the new campaign?
Yeah, we've been back training now 2 weeks tonight. It's been fairly positive so far. The squad's been training well. They've come back in good enough condition. We've added Shane O'Gara from Strabane Athletic, Bart Wesolowski from Maiden City, and Shamie McLaughlin from Greencastle at the minute, and possibly looking at one more. We'll be happy enough where we're at, because we feel the boys deserve a chance at this level, the players that we have, and they're hungry for it. So we're looking forward to it. Obviously, it's going to be a test. It's going to be different for everybody, but there's an excitement building. So there is within the club and within the area, and crowds. We played a friendly last Saturday, and probably the biggest crowd I've ever seen at a friendly of ours ever. So there's obviously anticipation and stuff. We placed our ban, which will be a really good test for us this Saturday as well. And we'll keep trying pushing on over the next few weeks to get ourselves ready for the start.
And you're in FAI Junior Cup action too shortly. I think it's a team from Dundalk you play. A run in that competition before you get into the National League would certainly give you a good footing heading into the third tier games.
Yeah, it's brilliant to have that to start. We play a team from Dundalk called Glenmuir United on August the 9th, which is a tough task because they're in the middle of their league. They play summer football or calendar football, so they'll be right at it. I think they've some ex-League of Ireland players in their squad as well, so they'll be right at it. The winner of that tie has the enviable task of playing away to Fairview Rangers the week after. So that's a massive tie between ourselves and Fairview. I think we're two favourites for the competition. So that's a huge tie. And then the winners of that actually got a home draw for the quarterfinal and against a team called Coachford from Cork. So look, it's all to play for, and it would be great to get a wee run on it and get the latter stages, especially now for preparation for the start of the National League on 30th of August as well.
Great stuff, Gavin. Appreciate you joining us on the Score programme this evening. That is Cockhill manager and former Finn Harps captain, Gavin Cullen. Now we're going to switch the focus to athletics. The National Senior Track and Field Championships will be held at Morton Stadium in Santry this coming weekend. A lot of the big hitters in Irish athletics will be competing at Morton Stadium across Saturday and Sunday, with, as always, a host of local athletes from the Northwest also bidding for national titles. A bit earlier today, I spoke to Patsy McGonigal to preview the main runners and riders from a Donegal point of view, and Patsy says that this is the big one at national level here in Ireland.
Yes, indeed it is, and particularly important this year, obviously, Mark, because European Championships a few weeks away, and this weekend is the last day opportunity to qualify for those that haven't done so already. So it's pretty important, absolutely.
So some of the big hitters will be competing across the weekend. Let's talk local athletes. Maybe we'll start with Arlene Crossan. She's going to be competing in both the 400 metres and the 400 metre hurdles, I think, this weekend. Patsy, which one of those would she be best to equipped to medal in?
Well, I'd say she will probably concentrate on the 400 metre hurdles. That's been her target all year, you know, to run fast, to win the national title. So, you know, all has been geared towards the 400 metre hurdles. Obviously, beyond this weekend, she'll have ambitions to be on the Irish relay team for the championships in Birmingham. But this weekend, 400 metre hurdles, absolutely. And, you know, she needs to go and really have a go at winning it.
And Lucy McGlynn, she's going to be in the 400 metre hurdles as well, is she?
She is indeed, and the Loughborough student. She's in Loughborough now. She's a Ballyshannon athlete and a Ballyshannon girl. And she's back in business again. You know, she kind of disappeared out of the sport there for a year or two, but she's made great effort to get back, and she'll be chasing the medal.
And no better man to go on to next, Mark English. I think he's going to be going in the 800 metres, Patsy. First time he's ever gone sub 1:43 at the Diamond League last week. Mark's in good form.
Absolutely, 100%. He's in great form, the best form of his life at 33 years of age. We've talked about him every weekend in recent times, and he's coming up against young Cian McPhillips. And, you know, that really has been billed as one of the races of the championships. And, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that all works out. A slight doubt about Mark. You know, last year he was entered as well, but he didn't go to the line. But we'll wait and see what his decision is come the weekend.
Let's touch on a number of other local athletes in with a good chance of medaling this weekend. One that jumps out, pardon the pun, Lauren Callaghan, going in the long jump. She's already a national champion and in with a huge chance of taking home another national title this weekend.
Yes, Lauren previously has won both indoor and outdoor national senior title. She has really chased through Europe at Birmingham. She's 4 centimetres short. This is her last opportunity. That standard is 6:55. She's on 6:51. So just, you know, fingers crossed the weather is with her and that she can really hit that 6:55. But she's very, very close to a standard. And she can win the nationals. And that would be yet another deserved big break for her.
What about the Dewhurst brothers, Ethan and Fintan, both bidding for national glory? Tell us a wee bit about their prospects.
Well, Ethan, of course, was picked for the World Junior Championships during the week, so he is now withdrawn from that. So it's just about Fintan, and Fintan can medal, absolutely can medal, but can he win it? Well, let's wait and see. But he has run PBs, he has run Donegal record this year, then his younger brother beat his record, so those two boys are exceptional. But on this occasion, we focus in on Fintan, 400 metre hurdles, and I wish him the best, and it would be massive if he were to win it.
Joseph Gillespie will go in the triple jump, and I'm led to believe he also has a good chance of medaling this weekend, Patsy.
Well, Joseph, you see, Joseph has won a medal in the national seniors previously. He won the national on the 23 championships a few weeks ago, and you know, he just talked to him 2 days ago. He would dearly, dearly, dearly love to win it. Obviously, that's his lifetime ambition. So second's the best he's ever been. So we'll just have to hope that he can hit it really big, you know. But I would anticipate a medal certainly for him. Well capable of a medal, whether he can win it or not, well, I don't know, but certainly he can medal.
And stay with the field events, the Gallen sisters from Lifford, they've had a good couple of weeks, they'll be in action this weekend as well.
Kiefer and Adrian Gallen of Lifford, they're brilliant. They turn up for every championship, and absolutely medal. They've done that since they were children and underage, and they're still going strong. Certainly expect them to be in the hunt for medals in the hammer, particularly, and Kiefer for maybe to push out for a medal in the shot. But they're an absolute credit to Lifford and Strabane Athletic Club, and their attitude in that. They turn up and put themselves on the line at absolutely every championship, whether it's underage or whatever. And this weekend, it's senior championship. So, yes, I don't keep it all right. I can't want one the hammer, but there's a very good girl from Cork. But they certainly both of them can shoot for medals.
And Cara Laverty, she'll go in the 1500 metre senior women's race.
That'll be interesting. You know, the Finn Valley girl, she's just back, finished 4 years a scholarship at Providence. A really successful period for her, and she's back home now. Her scholarship is complete, and she now has got to pick up on the Irish scene and the scene beyond that. So it'll be interesting to see how she deals with the 1500 metres and where she's at this moment. You know, it's a big change in her life, coming off 4 years in the States and then getting back home and then getting into a different regime of training, environment and so on. So I'll be interested to see how that goes.
So with all that being said, Patsy, you would possibly expect a number of medals and maybe an odd national champion or two to be coming back to the Northwest this weekend?
You have summed it up there. That's exactly what I would hope for. And obviously, the more the merrier. But last year, indeed, we did do well. And so let's hope we can repeat that. And there will be, in addition to the local stuff, there will be some serious running. And some of it's televised, of course. But there will be some serious running. The big story is around Adelecki, who has not, as of yet, got a qualifying standard. And she's chasing a standard in the 200 metres. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. And she's up against Maudsley in the 200 metres. So that is one of the big races of the championships.
There you go. That is our athletics correspondent, Patsy McGonigal, on all things National Senior Track and Field Championships held in Santry this weekend. Well, it is time for a short break here on the programme. We'll be hearing from Donegal man Darren McGee on his new book, Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacked Sport, very shortly. So stay tuned for that.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports, home to a full range of Gaelic gloves designed for comfort, grip and performance. Shop now at michaelmurphysports.ie.
You're very welcome back to the Score programme here on Highland Radio on this Thursday evening, the 23rd of July. Now, Donegal man Darren McGee has just published a book that gives an informative, thought-provoking and indeed worrying insight into the world of online sports gambling. The book, called Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacks Sport, highlights in particular the relationship between football and gambling companies, the growing exposure of children and young people to betting, the shift to 24/7 online gambling on smartphones, and the human cost, including addiction, debt and mental health impacts. Highland Radio's Chris Ashmore has been speaking to Dara about the book, the research behind it and some of its main findings.
Dara, many thanks for joining us here on Highland Radio. You are an academic based at the University of Bath. You grew up in Donegal. You're widely regarded as a leading authority on the changing relationship between gambling and sport. And you've just published a book called Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacked Sport. Very topical that I'm talking to you just after the World Cup final. No doubt there was millions spent around the world on all sorts of bets. So first of all, maybe just tell me a little bit about the book and the reason why you decided to write it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Firstly, Chris, it's been a pleasure doing lots of Irish media over the last month, and it means even more to me to do some local media in Donegal. So it's a pleasure to do this. The book does a couple of things. I guess the first thing is it traces the growth and expansion of online gambling. So something very different to, you know, what even I would have grown up with in Donegal in the 90s and early 2000s, you know, where you would kind of cycle down to a local village and walked into an actual bookie and handed over, you know, physical currency and placed a bet maybe on the outcome of a game or a horse race. I really trace the revolution that was the internet, then the smartphone, the rise of social media, and kind of everything that the big tech giants of the Silicon Valley unleashed on us. And so the book makes this argument that we're in a new age of online gambling that's faceless, it's frictionless, it's accessible 24/7. And I guess at the heart of the book is this idea that sport has been central to the growth and the expansion of this industry. And it's all in that term hijacking, of course, this idea that sport's been key to the reduction in the age of the punters that the gambling industry pursue today, the shift to focus away from horse racing, and really the reframing of gambling as a mainstream entertainment form rather than a known addictive industry.
It really has never been easier to place a bet. And given all the time and research that you put into the book, have you found out that it's an even scarier world that we live in than you actually had thought at the start?
Absolutely. There's a chapter of the book called Gambling's Dark Web, and that's really about data science and surveillance capitalism. And I think there's a sense among most parents now that, you know, online safety is something we need to consider. And I guess one of my key arguments in the book is that all parents should consider gambling as part of that online safety today. And you know, the idea of, you know, whether our kids should have smartphones. Well, the day they have a smartphone is the day they have access, you know, if they're over the age of 18, is the day they've, frictionless access to a vast industry. And it's not just sports gambling today. Of course, it's the online casino as well. And the World Cup is a great example of that. A lot of young people will download an app to place a bet on, you know, one of the games. And the truth is, when they do that, they're nothing more than a click away from the online casino, which is one of the most ruinous, addictive products, you know, there is.
Now, I know I was actually listening to the radio during the week, and I know there's going to be a tightening up in relation to various aspects of gambling here in this country. How soon and how effective that is remains to be seen. But just to give people an idea, a few figures. For the UK, for example, 1.4 million problem gamblers, you're saying. So proportionately speaking, in Ireland, you're running into tens of thousands, maybe even over 100,000. It is a serious problem.
It is a serious problem. And the intro to the book makes clear that we don't take serious how serious this problem is. You know, there's a bit of a societal, a kind of historical lag. You know, it's only 2014 onwards that gambling is considered a real addiction. And so there's a degree of lag in how we, you know, Irish society understand gambling. You know, for generations, it was probably written off as something you could kind of, you know, pull yourself together and get over. But the truth is, you know, you speak to any family and there will be a ruinous story of addiction, some of gambling addiction somewhere in that story. And the truth is, you know, those figures you've just quoted me, Chris, are figures on problem gambling. And the truth is they're very unreliable. They're poorly measured, often using different kind of measurement tools. And they also don't look at the scale of harm overall. So that is the idea that, you know, be below the level of kind of clinical addiction, there are many kind of hundreds of thousands in Ireland or millions in the UK more that are being harmed by gambling in ways that remain largely hidden and unseen, because the truth is gambling is largely an invisible addiction and its harms often remain kind of concealed until, you know, people's life are at the point of implosion, really.
Now, tell me a little bit about a number of the companies that the book really focuses on and just, I suppose, how prominent they are, and to many of us, they are household names.
Yeah, the book, you know, across 400 pages, it's fair to say the book attempts to tell different types of stories. And of course, you know, the truth is, in a different light, the stories of some of these companies are genuinely extraordinary. You've got, you know, to start at home, you've got Paddy Power, which is central to the kind of narrative of the book. You know, this company that emerges from the kind of the fusion of a series of Irish bookmakers who are concerned about the spread of British firms like Coral and William Hill in Dublin. They band together to kind of, you know, push back the Brits, as it was, and in the process realize that they've got a unique market and stick. They really kind of realize that their humor and marketing can be used to kind of expand. And of course, what happens is they come back across the water and become one of the biggest gambling firms, not just in the UK, but today, of course, globally, you know. And it's an extraordinary story of marketing, Paddy Power. Then you've got Bet365, whose founder, Denise Coates, goes on to become the highest paid woman in the UK, you know, a woman that's paid more than kind of all the kind of Fortune 500 companies put together. And she's a woman very much emerging into this man's world. And she pioneers what today we know as in-play betting, which, of course, carves up a single sporting event into kind of hundreds, if not thousands, of micro markets. And that's an extraordinary story. And you've got Sky Bet, which, of course, is this kind of in-house betting firm founded by Sky Sports, which is the broadcaster most associated with the incredible rise of the Premier League. And they kind of see a customer base that is in-house already. And they see the potential of a gambling firm as early as the kind of turn of the century. And they're just three of the firms. Then there's Betfair and a whole host of other firms whose stories are told in the book. And And one of the most remarkable parts of that story is that they all emerge within, some of them within a couple of months of each other. And there was this mad scramble online. You know, they're all kind of trying to launch websites and get their apps off the ground. And it becomes this Darwinian arms race to kind of, you know, become market leaders. And the book kind of traces where that takes them, you know.
And of course, many people familiar with, you know, the advertising, it's very much in your face. You can hardly watch a sporting event without some sort of betting company being to the fore, and all sorts of things like free bets and bonuses. And if you do so much betting, you get so much extra free. People think, you know, it's a bit of fun, it's a bit of crack, but not for everybody.
No, and, you know, that's the most pioneering part of what this industry did. The deregulation of gambling in the UK and Ireland meant that at a certain point, 2007 in the UK, for instance, suddenly gambling firms could come out from behind frosted glass. They were free to market, and they partnered with some of the best marketing firms in the world, and they created slogans, taglines, and ultimately this narrative that gambling wasn't an addictive kind of product, but rather kind of could be, you know, a harmless entertainment form. And that's where sport really comes in, because sport, particularly betting on football, was this kind of fresh new take for the industry. And they threw, you know, at first tens of millions at it in terms of marketing. And today, you know, there's up to £2 billion spent in the UK each year on marketing gambling alone. You know, the average Premier League, the opening Premier League week last season, 30,000 exposures to gambling across the Premier League matches. And that's kind of volumes only the most crude measure of what they're doing there. They also became ingenious kind of content marketers. And part of that is the inducements you just mentioned. You know, I do many talks where I have to break down the kind of deceptive nature of inducements, like you just mentioned, this idea of, you know, bet £5 or bet €5, get €50 in free bets. And the average young person, the average young fan doesn't understand all the ways in which they're being deceived when they kind of sign up to an app based on a deal like that. This idea that, of course, they're handing over €5 of fungible currency, but what they're getting back is basically a digital currency that will have to be wagered a certain number of times before it's withdrawable from the gambling platform. And of course, all of this is engineered in favor of the gambling firms at every turn. And if there ever was a time where, you know, that old age old notion that you might be able to beat the bookie if you had kind of, you know, if you really knew your stuff, this idea that sports betting was a monetization of knowledge that fans actually had, I think one of the things that the book does well is hopefully it demonstrates to fans today that it truly is a mug's game, as one of the chapters sets out. The gambling firms kind of are, you know, 20 steps ahead of you today rather than perhaps 5 or 10, you know, 30 years ago.
One of the features of the books is that you include a number of case studies, and indeed you've also been in contact with some footballers who themselves have been drawn into the whole darker side of things and who have suffered considerably.
Yeah, one of the most enjoyable, if harrowing, chapters in the book for me was I was very lucky and worked very hard to negotiate access to Sporting Chance, which listeners might know as the charity that was founded by Tony Adams, the former Arsenal and England captain. And it's an incredible charity. It's a kind of one of the only addiction clinics in the world for elite athletes. And I was able to spend, you know, confidential time there looking at kind of what they do and really the scale of how they begin as a charity that's treating predominantly alcohol addiction. That kind of is the noughties takes over, becomes more about drug addiction and kind of other addictions, but gambling isn't on the radar at all. And then kind of the second decade of the noughties, there's this kind of floodgates opening where gambling becomes the main presentation for addiction and elite athletes. And really what they helped me see is kind of these canaries in the coal mine of an industry where it's spilled onto the field of play. You know, you've kind of record numbers of athletes now being either banned or berated for their own gambling, their own use of products. They're in essence endorsing every weekend on repeat for most of the year. And there's also kind of this something that I tried very hard to unpack this tension, but it's changing the relationship between fan and athlete as well, in the sense that you have fans turning on their heroes when bets go wrong. And so in a certain sense, you've suddenly got athletes at the heart of this storm. And I guess in a whole different light, you've also got ex-athletes, our own Roy Keane being one of them, endorsing the gambling industry at every turn. So it's a world full of tension and hypocrisy at the moment, Chris.
Now, it's a big, big industry, particularly when you look at the football clubs. Going forward, Dara, things may tighten up in terms of gambling and laws and restrictions, but given the volume of money in it, there's going to be considerable resistance. How do you think it's all going to pan out? You know, if you look at the changes over the last 5 years, can you make any prediction as to where we'll be in another 5 years from now?
Well, whether I can make the prediction in five or perhaps a decade, I do hold a great deal of hope, and I would actually implore people to remember that there is precedent here. It's only two decades ago that tobacco sponsorship was still in sport, but somehow it was morally appropriate for that to happen. And there came a day where, you know, we all knew that this industry was no longer appropriate to be on what are community clubs. We shouldn't be exposing kind of young people, fans, communities to this. And of course, the same happened with alcohol. We are currently seeing a reckoning with social media platforms. You know, they're being kind of, there are lawsuits on a monthly basis ruling them as harmful and defective. We are increasingly aware of online safety issues. So when I look at all of that, Chris, I actually think that the reckoning with gambling is kind of overdue and imminent. So I would kind of implore people to remember that this all of this didn't happen through evolution. This was an industry manufactured from the turn of the century, and governments should be held accountable for that and should be held accountable going forward. This can, you know, we can roll back here. Sport also can take accountability. We have ex-athletes, we have football clubs, we have governing bodies that could take a stand and privilege public health over kind of profit and greed. And so I think fans and communities have a big role to play in that. And politically, I see this changing quite quickly. I guess, regrettably, what tends to happen with these harmful industries is the quantum of harm grows and grows and grows before real change happens. And so, you know, I'm loath to allow that to happen without calling it out. And so whether it's 5 or 10 years, Chris, I do hold hope for change.
And just before I let you go, no harm in just recalling your own past. You grew up near the Manor roundabout, and you played soccer with a number of local clubs before going to fields further away, including a sports scholarship in Canada. So just give us the background.
Yeah, I mean, I'm asked a lot about kind of the idealism that's kind of at the heart of the book that I've just written. And of course, that's derived from my own very positive experience of what sport is in Donegal and what it can be for young people. You know, I go on to do a PhD in my 20s, and the idea of, you know, kind of a relatively working class boy from rural Donegal doing a doctorate probably wasn't in the stars for me. And it's football that takes me there. You know, it's, you know, went off to Loughborough to do a master's and played football there, and the opportunity to do a scholarship over in Canada alongside a doctorate and spend 5, you know, brilliant years in Canada. And all that begins with, you know, local football clubs in Donegal like Drumahol and Letterkenny Rovers and later Finharps and Derry City. And so, yeah, when I'm asked about the idealism, I constantly think of home, you know, because it's shaped what I think of sport and hopefully has shaped kind of the moral and ethical aspects of what the book tries to argue for.
And just one further point, Dara, since the book was published, I suspect you've attracted quite a lot of publicity because of the topic itself.
Yeah, and one of the nicest things has been, you know, I've been away from home now, you know, well over a decade. And although I'm home 2 or 3 times a year, this has brought me home in a different way, in the sense of, you know, I've engaged with nearly every corner of the Irish media. So that's been, you know, really fantastic. And of course, there was, you know, launches in the UK and Canada and Ireland. And so I've had a crazy 6 weeks. But given that the book was nearly 5 years in the making, 5 weeks of media felt apt after that, you know.
So, Imitation Games, How Gambling Hijacked Sport by Dara McGee. It's published by Bodley Head. Available in all good bookshops, as they say. And can you get it online as well, Dara?
You can, of course, and an audio book.
There you go. That is Donegal native Dara McGee. Very interesting chat with our own Chris Ashmore. It's time for a break. We'll be wrapping up the show by hearing from Derry boxer Conor Coyle. And we'll be heading back to Croatia, where it is Derry up against HNK Rijeka. We'll be going back to Kevin McLaughlin very shortly.
Highland Sports is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports, home to a full range of Gaelic gloves designed for comfort, grip and performance. Shop now at michaelmurphysports.ie.
You're very welcome back to the final part of this evening's Score programme. Let's cross back over to Kevin McLaughlin, who's in Croatia. It is Derry City taking on HNK Rijeka in the Conference League qualifiers. Kevin, we're underway.
Yes, we're coming up in the 6 minutes and Rijeka's putting on a bit of pressure here. They've got a couple of corners or another one coming in. It's still scoreless here. Rijeka, as I say, putting on the pressure, but neither keeper has been tested at the minute, but just as he stick with me, there's a corner just coming in here from Rijeka here now, and the cross just into the box and headed clear by Liam Boyce, but it falls and aids the effort, blocked down, and Michael Duffy now has it in Derry, have cleared their lines. But yeah, it's 5 minutes, 6 minutes gone here. It's HNK Rijeka nil, Derry City nil.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Kevin will have a full-time report up online at HighlandRadio.com after the game. So head over to HighlandRadio.com not to miss a thing. Derry nil, Rijeka nil. So let's switch focus to boxing for the final part of the programme. Derry native Conor Coyle will fight American Mark Buick on a stacked Zuffa boxing card at the 3 Arena on August 8th. Coyle will be aiming to push his pro record out to 23-0 with a victory over Buick and set himself up for another tilt at a world title in the near future. I spoke with Conor a bit earlier to look ahead to what is going to be a huge event in Dublin.
Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted to get back and fight in my homeland and Dublin, you know, just a stone throw away basically from home. So I'm pretty excited to get back and fighting in Ireland again.
And it'll be your first appearance in Dublin in quite a while. I think it was 2017 the last time you fought in Dublin. What are your memories of that occasion?
Yeah, almost 10 years ago. I'm going to be pretty excited to get in now. I've never boxed in the 3 Arena, and I heard it's a great venue, especially for a boxing atmosphere. So I'm looking forward to that.
Your opponent on August 8th is American Mark Buick. He's coming off a win over Antonio Woods earlier in the year, so no doubt he'll be coming to the end of this fight full of confidence as well.
Yeah, well, Zuffa seems to have big confidence in them. That's why they put him in against me. You know, obviously they want to test him as well, and they want to test me. He's a tough Texan, and you know, I know what he brings, but he's not on my level, and I'll just show that on August 8th. So I've put on the hard work. I've had sparring with Edgar Berlinga and Matteo Tapia and Hot Rod in my gym as well, light heavyweight, number 5 in the world. So best preparations I've had for this camp to date now.
Yeah, and obviously you're focused on your own training, but if you were to take a look at Mark, what kind of style do you think he'll bring to the ring on the 8th of August?
I've watched that last fight he's had. He brings pressure, you know. He might be a slow starter. He was a slow starter in that fight, but sometimes I'm a slow starter. It takes me a round or two to get going. Yeah, I'm expecting they bring a pressure, and he's going for the upset too, so he's going to be going for it.
Yeah, it's a massive card. A couple of other big names on it as well, a world title fight, but it's a huge card for Zuffa to be putting on. What is the story with you and Zuffa now? Is this you signed with Zuffa, or is it just you're fighting on their card? How does that work?
We do have a contract with them, but for the future fights, we have one more fight with them after this, but you know, we want to negotiate. We want to negotiate a better contract. So I want to go on and show them what I can do in the next fight here now in Dublin. And then we can renegotiate a contract and go for something bigger and better.
Yeah, and Conor, we haven't had you on here in a while on Highland. You've had a turbulent couple of years. You had been gearing up for a real tight at a world title when you were hampered with that administrative suspension after a post-fight drug test. You obviously have always stressed that it was an issue with the testing process and that you've never taken a banned substance. How did that affect you, and how has it been trying to move on from that period in your career?
Well, when that happened, that was probably the most devastating thing I've ever experienced. you know, because obviously, you know, I haven't done anything, but getting through that was pretty tough. But I knew we were going to come out the other end of it, because I always knew that I did nothing wrong. So getting through that, and then having the Lara, we had a title fight with Lara, WBA world title. I actually had the contract and all signed when all that happened. So that obviously fell through on me. But we're actually working on another opportunity to fight for that again. And hopefully pretty soon we can fight Lara for the WBA world honours.
Yeah, it's full steam ahead now. And as you say, you still have huge ambitions of getting back to a world title fight. And that'll all start with a win over Mark Buick in a couple of weeks at the Three Arena. You'll be looking to come home, put on a big performance and go 23-0, I think, in your pro career live on Sky. What an opportunity for you, Conor.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped up for this one. Especially fighting in front of 13,000 Irish fans. It's going to be exciting. So hopefully everybody can tune in.
Yeah, and elsewhere on this card on the 8th of August, the main event sees fellow Irishman Aaron McKenna, of course, face Italian Etinosa Oliha. That's for the IBF middleweight world title. You've also got Callum Walsh on the card facing Tyler Denny. It's a stacked card, and it really should be a brilliant night of boxing at the Three Arena.
It's definitely a stacked card. We have Joe Ward on the card too, an Olympian, Irish amateur pedigree, absolutely great fighter as well. So it's completely stacked with Irish fighters. It's going to be a pretty good card to be watching.
And no doubt you'll be taking down a big contingent from Derry on the night. You'll have a bit of noise behind you on your walkout, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm hoping everybody in Derry comes and backs me, and the outskirts of Derry as well. I hope everybody comes down for support. It could be my last time ever fighting in Ireland again, this close to home. So I'm hoping everybody has the opportunity to come and see me live.
And if there are people listening to this and thinking, I wouldn't mind a bit of that, are there still tickets available, and how can people get their hands on them, Conor?
Yeah, if they have me on Facebook or Instagram, there's links on my Facebook. They purchase tickets on my name. So if they would like to go on my socials, they would find a ticket link there.
There you go. That is Derry native Conor Coyle gearing up for a massive fight against Mark Buick on August 8th. That Zuffa boxing card at the Three Arena. Running out of time here on the programme this evening, but I'll just take a quick look at what's happening in the Conference League qualifiers. Shelburne have taken a 1-0 lead against Nom Kalju. 10 minutes gone in that game. We heard from Kevin McLaughlin, is still 0-0 in Croatia. Rijeka 0, Derry City 0, and Scottish side Motherwell are still scoreless against HB Torshavn. Earlier on, Hibernian beaten away to Kosovan side Malasheva, and Coleraine suffering a heavy 5-0 defeat away to HJK. That's just about all we have time for on the Score programme this evening. I've been your host, Mark Gallagher. Thank you very much, as always, for listening in. If you missed anything, you'll be able to listen back to the full show very shortly over on our website at highlandradio.com or over on the Radio Player app. Trudy O'Donnell is up next just after the 8 o'clock news. But that's it from me. Have a great evening. Enjoy the sport at the weekend. Take care.
Highland Sports is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports. Find all your GA essentials at michaelmurphysports.ie.